Welcome to Africa LSV Podcast, your monthly podcast for language services in Africa, where we cover trends, translation, interpretation, localization, and language industry in general. This podcast is presented by Bilingual Communications and Media Council and hosted by the wonderful Adina Maran Koulibaly. If you want to give your feedback or featured on the podcast, just send us an email at the address info@bilingualconsult.com.
This podcast is supported by Multilingual, your go-to source for language industry news since 1987.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Africa's LSP podcast. In this episode, we're discussing game localization and the rise of Arabic in the gaming industry. My guest is Eman Abdul. She is an English-Arabic translator and specializes in game localization and transcreation. Eman, you're welcome to the podcast.
Hi, Adi. Thank you so much for inviting me. I'm very glad to be with you today, and I hope our audience enjoy our talk today about game localization.
Most definitely, Eman, I believe that our listeners are going to enjoy this podcast and that we're going to have a great time. As you introduce yourself to our listeners, Eman, I'm curious to know how your journey into game localization began. Is it something that you've always yearned for, or are there specific events in your life that led you on this path?
Yeah, sure. This is Eman Abdul. I'm an English-Arabic translator. I'm specialized in localization and transcreation. I translate marketing text, e-commerce projects, and video games. I started in game localization when I was starting out as a translator, and I worked on the translation of a very popular game, and I found the idea of working as a video games translator very interesting. So my hobbies are basically reading, playing games, listening to useful podcasts, and of course definitely music, but I love useful podcasts like yours so much. That's all about me.
Can you tell us about how it all started? How did you start loving this industry and get into it that much?
Yeah, since I was a kid, I loved playing online games, like the PC games at the time when I was a little younger was very popular, and I'm into adventure and open world games. So I used to play these games and I enjoy my time and enjoy myself after studying and reading and all the duties you have as a little kid. Then the more I delve into the translation, and I find many specializations, including video games. I find it very interesting. Although I wasn't that kind of people who appreciate video game translators, because when I was playing, I used to play using the English language. And because every time I change the language into Arabic, I find it very difficult. It's not because I don't understand Arabic. It's my native. But the language used in the translation is, people or translators, I thought they should have done a better job when it comes to translating video games. And sometimes I look at the sentence and I know, I know the source text of this sentence because I play the game in English. And when I see the translation, I say to myself, use a good style, use a fancier word, use a good language or a better language. So I was like a little bit annoyed with the language used or the style translators used. But when I became myself a video games translator, I found it's totally different, because there are so many restrictions there over translation, and you have style guides, you have many instructions from the client, you have character limits, you have so many things that you should abide by, and these so many things affect the translation and impact the way you see the translation from the gamer perspective. But if you were, you know, if you tried to delve in the industry and became yourself a video game translator, you find it very difficult and very challenging.
So based on that experience, like when you are now playing a video game, how do you appreciate the translations or the localization?
Absolutely not. I respect everyone working in this industry because I know the challenges myself, and I, you know, every project has its own challenges and has its own instructions and style guides and, you know, a set of things that you should follow, and, you know, the client's instructions that, you know, it's changed over time, and the more you delve into the project, the more you have like things you should ask the client about. So I respect so much everyone who translates video games, because it's not easy at all, because it's not like you're translating a legal text. I know legal text is difficult, definitely, but it's like you're not changing the cultural elements, you're not changing the names, you're not considering if this language is a gender language, you don't have this character limits of anything, so you're free to use, you know, some things or some forbidden stuff here in video games.
So Eman, this is the first time that we're discussing localization on the podcast. So it'd be great if you can give us some background information on what localization is all about so that our listeners can be on the same page with us.
Yeah, sure. Localization is the adaptation of a product or a service to meet the needs of a particular audience and a particular language or culture, and even sometimes dialect. So you're changing all the cultural elements, including measurements, time zones, the idiomatic expression, the currencies, national holidays, local color sensitivities and religious sensitivities, and even emojis. So a little mistake can make a huge impact on the translation. And we all know that when the translation is good, nobody talks about it. But when it's bad, you know, you're done as a translator and as a business. For example, the colors and the sensitivities of colors of every culture, it varies from one country or from one culture to another. For example, if I'm translating a text from English into like to a Latin American audience, for example, I would say that feel the happiness with this yellow dress. This is not a good thing to translate for Latin American. Why? Because yellow has a negative connotation and it's linked to death and mourning in Latin America. But it's associated with success and high standard of living in some African countries. Germany, on the other hand, links a yellow with envy and jealousy. So, you know, like every country or every region has, you know, some connotations with even colors. You know, emojis too are different. You know, like sometimes you deal with a person or you're chatting with your international friends and you send a thumb up or an emoji saying yeah to someone, and you feel that's okay, and they find that it's offensive. So a very every little thing that you should be careful when you're localizing the text. And this makes the whole idea is like you're adapting everything, you're changing any cultural element. Otherwise, your product is done if you don't consider this. And in the video games, there are so many countries that ban certain things. For example, Germany and Brazil, you know, banning so many of the video games related to violence, like shooting games. And when this game is banned in this and in one country, the sales decreases, and you need to like release a new version of this game censored. Like for example, Call of Duty Black Ops in Germany, It's banned because of high impact gory violence. And the solution was releasing a censored version. And voila, you can play the game after making it censored. So considering everything is key in localization.
Thank you so much, Eman, for the examples that you gave. Now, I am just wondering, can that have an impact on the choice of professionals who work on particular projects? For instance, as an English, Arabic translator and localization specialist, are you able to work on localization games that are meant for other countries aside Egypt?
You know, in Arabic, the situation is like different a little bit because we have over 20 countries that speak Arabic. So choosing one language for every country is not that easy, and it's not will make profits for the business or the company. Here in Arabic, we use the modern standard Arabic and like the official newspapers and, you know, web content, if it's official regarding, you know, like a government. Every country has its own dialect, and this makes the whole thing a bit difficult to make it in one dialect. In the past, this was the norm, because Egyptian Arabic is the lingua franca, because most of the Arabs, like all of them, understand Arabic because it's the popular language they use to watch movies, sitcoms, plays in Egyptian Arabic. So they understand our dialect very well. So in the past, the norm was to translate the game into Egyptian Arabic and everybody will understand. But this time is different. You have to use modern standard Arabic, but when it comes to like using a creative or in-game dialogues or something like this, you can use the dialect of the character or of the people included in this part of the game.
So you have given us a definition of localization and also provided some examples of what happens when localization is not properly done. Can we go on to look at the processes that are involved when it comes to localization? Let's say, for instance, a client reaches out to you and wants you to localize a game or a software. What are the various steps that you're going to follow in order to carry out such a project?
Yeah, let's start a little by defining game localization, just to know the main goal of game localization. Game localization is the process of translating a video game for a foreign market. So the main focus here is to entertain the users who are the players in this case. So it's user-oriented, but it's not only translating text. You're translating videos, images, sounds, songs, animations, because, you know, you're playing and you're watching something and the content cannot be disassociated with the audiovisual content you're receiving or you're watching. So you should consider all the cultural elements in the game, like numbers, hyperlinks, colors, even the covers of the video games, measurements, the legislations that are used in different that are varied in countries, and the names of the game and the characters inside the game. We have 5 steps to get a game localized. Starting step number 1 with globalization, in which we are studying the market in general, the company or the games company study the market in general. Step number 2 is internationalization, in which the company analyze the game to know how it will be localized into different languages and discover the possible issues regarding target languages, like character limits, unsupported fonts, special characters, just to make sure that the localization process will go smoothly. Step number 3 is the localization, and it's the translation of the game and the content of this game. After the localization, we have step number 4, linguistic quality assurance or linguistic quality assessment that is done by companies or people to make sure that all the linguistic elements in the game are followed correctly and there's no issues regarding any linguistic element in the game. The final step is testing. You test the game, you hire a company or people just to test the game by playing it to spot the bugs and possible errors in the game. And after that, voila, your game is localized and ready to be served for the target language or the target audience. But not all the clients choose to go through all these. These steps are like for everyone. But the process of localization itself is not like the same in every situation. Because we have like three types of localization in video games. Sometimes the client asks for basic localization. In basic localization, we translate the information about the game in app stores or websites like description, the keywords, screenshots. So the game itself is not localized in this in the target language, but everything about the information about it is translated. We have partial localization in which we are translating the in-game text and the subtitles. And if your client is that rich and ready to pay so much money, you have this full localization in which we are translate all in and out game content, including video, audio files. So we are, in this case, we just don't stop with the translator. We need voiceovers. We need dubbing. So it's like making the game like fully localized and ready to be sold in the target for the target audience in a specific country or region.
So Eman, for all these processes that you just mentioned, when it comes to game localization, the activities carried out by different localization specialists, or can they be carried out by one professional?
No, as a localizer or video game translator, you just contact with the project manager, and if you're a freelancer, you start with a vendor manager and then a project manager, and you translate the game, and then came the reviewers, and after the reviewers, quality assessment people, and after the quality assessment is the testing people, and before you start, you have this game developers who develop the games, and the people who are responsible for creating the content in the game and making the animations and all this stuff. But you don't deal with these people. If you have any question or you have any thing to ask, you contact your project manager or vendor manager. Sometimes you can ask the client himself or herself if she or he is available or if this is an option for you. So you don't deal with so many people unless the project is divided into like so many files or so many like parts. So you deal with your colleagues. That's it, I guess.
I can imagine that means you'd have to also have very good team working relationship. And based on that, I want to find out some of the skills that have helped you to thrive in this industry and some of the skills that maybe you can encourage others to have so that they can also do well in the game localization industry.
Yeah, sure. Like video game translators should have a set of skills, in my opinion. First, you should be creative. And this is like, you know, this is it. You should be creative. Why? Because you're dealing with bonds, you're dealing with humor, wordplay, you're dealing with cultural differences. Sometimes you face songs and poems, and sometimes you have character limits. And you have, if you're translating into a gender language like me, it's a bit challenging. So you need to be creative to overcome these challenges, to overcome these obstacles while translating, to make the translation smoothly. And, you know, sometimes the game, the source game or the source content is well written, at creatively written. So you should deal, you have this problem of having like your target text, like equivalent to the source text style or, you know, the high language used. Yeah. You also need to be familiar with technology. We're using CAD tools, and sometimes the client asks you to work in an unknown platform for you. So you should be ready to know how to deal with these platforms or to use these platforms. And, you know, the internet is there, and you're like, Google got your back. So if you don't understand how to use a specific platform, you should like Google it and you'll find how to deal with this. But the familiarity itself is like is a big asset for you. You should also be comfortable with translating different types of text. So we don't translate only the games or the dialogues between characters in the new games. No. We have manuals, we have tutorials, we have legal texts, we have marketing texts in which you send newsletters to the players informing them of new content or updates. We have dialogues between characters, we have description of events if the game has any events or release any events. Another skill is the familiarity of the world of games itself. Because when you play games, you understand the dynamics of the world of games, and you're familiar with, you know, like the events, the characters, the menus, the everything, the manuals itself, the tutorials, everything. So the more you know about the games and the world of games, the better, of course. You should also be able to start new things and challenges. Voila! Yeah, because you're starting a project or a game and you know all the style guide, the instructions, the client in, you know the universe of the game, how characters react. If the game is historical, you know the era of the game. You know like everything about the game and you're an expert. But unfortunately, there is a time that this game will be like finished and the project is finished and you have to start a new project and a new game, a new style guide, new instructions, new characters, new universe. So everything is new and you're feeling like a little bit depressed or sad, but you will get over it by time. You should also be familiar with the different types of games. Like we have so many genres and games. It's not like always like Fortnite or shooting games. No, we have RPGs. We have multiplayer online games. We have racing games, horror games, adventure, open world, sports, fighting, dance, singing. We have some music. And you know, like the more you know genres of games, the better for you to understand. And like, it's not a must to know like all the genres. No, it's like when you start with one or two genres, you will like learn the other by time and by practicing. Nothing is better than practicing translating different genres of games. Also, you should be attentive to details. Yeah, that's very clear because we don't have so much context in video games. Sometimes the games are not released yet. So we play the guessing game like most of the time, but sometimes it doesn't work. So in this case, we ask for more content. So it's also not to be attentive because in big games, we have several characters and every character has their own tone. Say repeated words or a specific sense of humor. Also, you should be attentive and to know the platform at which the game will be available, because every platform has its own terms, and you know the different terms of each platform. Yeah, I guess these are the skills. Of course, you should like know your target language and your the cultural elements in your target language.
You also mentioned earlier on that one has to be a game lover in order to be able to localize games properly. However, on the flip side of the coin, there is also the fact that people can get addicted to games. So as a language professional who is localizing games, is there not a risk of getting addicted to playing these games often?
Yeah. Unfortunately, there are some people who are addicted to playing games, and but the countries, some countries are aware of this, and they have like legal restrictions over the number of viewing or the game's addiction. Even some companies, game companies, became more interested in the mental health of the gamers or the people who play their games, and sometimes they like have this update of saying that like you should rest, you should like communicate with like real friends in the real world. Of course you should have like limits. Yeah, I enjoy the game, but I have like so many stuff to do, and I have to close the game right now, and the next time I will see what I will do with this enemies or the boss of the game. So you know, like everything, your self-discipline is key in life.
Great. So, Eman, you are an English-Arabic translator. What do you think about Arabic within the gaming industry? Is it rising? Is it getting more audiences? And are clients requesting for more of that?
Yeah, Arabic is one of the fastest-growing languages in video games. Let's explain first why the gaming market is this huge and why it's like booming all that recently. So in 2018, the global gaming market was reportedly worth $138 billion. Imagine how much is this. And last year, while many economic sectors were heavily impacted, the video game world is all about booming. So game sales are reaching very high levels, especially digital. And streaming platforms such as Twitch reached like a record of viewing with 5 billion hours in the second quarter of 2020. The number of gamers all over the world is over 2 billion and 800 million gamers all over the world, and it's predicted that they will grow by another 100 million people by the end of this year. So it's very big, and the more you delve into the gaming market, the more you know it's bigger than you think before. Let's say that Arabic or the Arab world is not like, doesn't have the lion's share of the game of the gaming market. The lion's share belongs to Asia Pacific region. It's the heart of the global video gaming industry. So according to estimates, there were over 1.5 billion video games in the region in 2020, and generating combined revenue of $78.3 million. I want just to make a disclaimer here. All the numbers mentioned are from Statista and Localized Direct latest report in game localization. So these numbers are, you know, we're talking about big numbers and huge numbers in the gaming industry. So people became ready to purchase full games and downloads and support live streamers. Everyone last year was like trying to escape from the real world, from the pandemic. Some people have so much free time and you don't have anything like the technology. So you're just trying to play the games. So according to Localized Direct's latest report, game developers most frequently translated games into German, French, European, Spanish, Brazilian, Portuguese, Russian, Italian, simplified Chinese, Japanese, Korean, and Polish till last year, 2020. And the next, like, ranked from 11 till 20, Arabic, Latin, Spanish, Turkish, traditional Chinese spoken in Hong Kong, traditional Chinese spoken in Taiwan, Dutch, Swedish, Thai, Vietnamese, and Indonesian. So according to this, Arabic is one of the top 20 languages in the gaming market. So let's talk about Arabic itself. So Arabic is the fifth most popular language with 420 million speakers. We're representing 6% of the global population. And we have a large gaming community and with 237 internet users. So it's like we are like so many people. And of course, this like attracts the gaming companies. More than 20 countries claim Arabic as an official language. Saudi Arabia, the United Arab Emirates, and Egypt are the most profitable in terms of gaming revenues. The Arabic-speaking countries take up the lion's share of the so-called MENA region, which includes 18 countries in the Middle East and North Africa. You know, like, African languages are not that used so much because in the gaming industry, unfortunately, because so many Africans speak English or French. So from the gaming company's perspective, it's time and money wasting if you are translating into a new language that it's spoken by this number of people. But there are some nonprofit organizations that are trying to, you know, accelerate the process of getting the games in the hands of African players and gamers, not only just mobile games. It started with mobile games, but I guess it will be better in the near future, and I hope so. Also, the little number of gamers in Africa nowadays do not encourage the companies to translate games and pay extra money for fewer number of gamers there. This can be solved like in the near future. We're having these like promising decisions or things. For LSPs and, you know, the linguistic enthusiasts, just like me, because I'm very interested in languages, you should like, if you don't have this opportunity to play games because you're living in a country that restricts games or ban them or anything, you have this option of playing mobile games or watch people who play games on YouTube. Sometimes I do this because I cannot afford to like to buy all the games because they are very expensive. So I watch the game on YouTube and I know how just people play it and the dynamics of the game. You know, and one video will lead to the other, and you will understand like most of the things in this game or in the gaming world. This will definitely help you to understand the gaming dynamics and how this world looks and how you can take a place in this big room.
The figures that you have mentioned are a clear indication that there is actually a boom when it comes to games within Arab nations. What do you think explains this?
So the widespread networks and advanced hardware made it possible for gamers to play more online games. In addition, the promising economic development trends bring more revenue opportunities for game studios expanding to these markets. So the big names in the gaming market started to have their studios in Saudi Arabia and United Arab Emirates, because you're open to the world and you have this amount of gamers or people who can play, and definitely can increase the sales of these companies. And I also would like to say that people in Persian Gulf countries live a luxurious life. So they are ready to buy games, and they are ready to spend money over games.
The reasons you have given for the boom in the gaming industry in Arab nations demonstrates that in the future, there's going to be more and more opportunities in that field. And I want to believe that the growth of the gaming industry in these nations has been spurred by specific genres of games. I know that we have action games, we have shooter games and fighting games and all that. What genres of games have been thriving when it comes to Arab nations?
The most popular games, or the most popular genres among Arabic players, are arcade, action, sports, racing, and casual games. So the top countries in the Arab world, like I've said before, Saudi Arabia, United Arab Emirates, and Egypt. But Saudi Arabia is the most profitable Arabic-speaking market, and it ranks at 22 by global gaming revenue, and 92% of the gamers consider themselves gaming enthusiasts. The most popular things in the United Arab Emirates are the mobile games, especially puzzles. And the United Arab Emirates is known as a big spender in the gaming industry, with most of the money going to mobile games. Around 39% of gamers in the United Arab Emirates prefer to spend on mobile games, while 33% prefer PC, and 38% prefer playing with consoles. Yeah, so this is how the Arab world is like big or huge for the gaming, and it attracts so many people. Also, the number of people who are young, and the young people is definitely the target of the gaming companies. They are very big in the Arab world, and everybody is like, they are they're ready to experience new things in the virtual world. Sometimes people seek to games or video games to have friendships and have to feel this feeling of belonging, especially in hard times. Some people, especially people with disability, they cannot like go out with people, and sometimes they resort to video games and have these online friends, and they play with each other and enjoy their time together, and that makes the feeling of community and the feeling of belonging grower or became higher.
I couldn't have imagined that there will be 2.8 billion gamers in the world. That's really interesting. It means that a lot of people are really into games.
Yeah, and even you may think that the people who are playing games are the younger generation. This is like, no, some people are over 35, some people even at 60 years old, they are playing games because the feeling of loneliness sometimes, like, it makes you like seek another world, or you need to like feel that you belong to the community, especially in the hard times. I'm assuring the hard times, because we're living during a pandemic, and it's not easy for people. Some people like lost their jobs, lost their beloved ones. They lost so many things. So in the games, we'd like to win. And if you don't win, you find this community of people who enjoy themselves and play with you, especially in multiplayer online games. And the gaming companies realized this, and some companies even release games for free and can make players play online for free. So if you don't buy the game, you can enjoy yourself and play online with your friends. And if you don't have enough money, you can like download the game and have it like for the rest of your life and enjoy your time. So It's great, and sometimes you feel like it's a big community, and yeah, it's like this.
Great. And I'm a bit curious. You mentioned some figures for the gaming industry for Arab nations. What do you think is the potential of the gaming industry for Africa in general and game localization? And what advice would you have for language service providers who might want to venture into that area?
Yeah, the African region is one of the regions in the world where the youth population is increasing. It's predicted by 2050, Africa's young people or those who aged between 1 year and 24 years will witness an increase of around 50%. So Africa is expected to have the most significant number of young people, and this is critical to the content's future when it comes to gaming. The statistics present the leading video gaming markets in Africa in 2018, ranked by revenue, are Egypt and South Africa and Morocco, like in this order. And the revenues are pretty huge and big. And you have this thing of playing with video games in mobile games. Like you're playing the game on mobile games because some African countries have restrictions or legalizations over money transaction. So you don't enjoy the whole experience of playing online and buying like new content of the game or buying online games. So you seek to free games or mobile games like most African gamers do. They are playing mobile games and free mobile games just because they are the only option for them. But this thing is going to change like in the near future because we have seen so many African influencers or African creative individuals are like expanding in some big platforms like Netflix, and they're starting to create their own content. So it's promising, and so many companies are like consider this promising growing of young people in Africa, and it definitely will help people in the future to play like online games, and the idea of restrictions over money transactions will sooner or later be solved, and we will be like everyone in the world.
I really hope that we'll get to that stage. So, Eman, you mentioned that you are a game lover yourself. You play a lot of games. And so I'd like to know, what are some of your favorite games?
Yeah, I like the adventure games and open world games because I like just sometimes I forget about the missions, and sometimes I forget just I would like to experience this world or to know this era. Especially I like Assassin's Creed so much. So when I play like Assassin's Creed, every chapter in a particular historical era, and I know about so many historical places and historical figures from Assassin's Creed. When I was young, that was like an epic for me. Just I know ancient Rome, I know the ancient Egypt, and that's great for your history class if you find it difficult to memorize everything. So I like to discover the places in the game. Also like racing games for the same reason. I play like a race and I choose like the city in which the race will be hold or begin or happen. So sometimes I choose London or Lisbon or Paris just to like to figure the world of this city and the popular places, the streets. And yeah, call me not an old person, or like an ob is a term used in the gaming community, and it's used to describe people who are like beginners and who are like don't complete the missions, and they are just easily got defeated by the enemies. I didn't care. I just play the game and I enjoy myself. And I thought this is what's interesting about it.
I think I'm going to look for some of these games and play them myself, because the way you talk about them, they sound very, very exciting. So, Emma, you've spoken about the skills that are required to become a game localization specialist. Are there other additional things that are needed? For instance, a language professional who wants to become a game localization specialist might need to take some courses or some training programs. Do you have any suggestions for these?
Yeah, sure. There are always an opportunity for everyone. Like I've said, there are required skills, and you should like acquire these skills to I don't like the word competition, or to be competent, or to be a good translator, or an exceptional translator, if you would like to describe it this way. So you have this opportunity of mastering your language and acquiring those skills. And your opportunity is bigger if you're translating into other language, or if you're translating from one of the popular languages, or the used language. Because in localization, we don't just have the source language and the target language. We have something called pivot language, or pivot localization. Yeah, pivot, if you're a Friends fan, you're just remembering Ross yelling at Rachel and Chandler, and say when they're moving the couch and he says, pivot, pivot, pivot. That's a pivot. We do a pivot if the original source, or the first wave of the localization content is not written or is not created in English or French. The Asian game studios and publishers sometimes prefer using Chinese, Japanese, or Korean at the first wave in their localization process. So the most common practice in this case is translating from Chinese, Japanese, or Korean into English. And after that, we're making English the source language, because it's easy to have so many translators translate from English into many different target languages. And this can be seen as feasible, time and cost effective opportunity for localizations into low sourced and rare languages. If you're an Arabic linguist, or trying to enter or you're starting your first steps in the game localization, you should like know your Arabic so much and know how the different countries in our Arab world uses their dialects, because sometimes the in-game dialogues, like I've said that before, are written in a certain dialect. So you should understand this, and you should like be careful when it comes to translating a game that has so many characters. And the client said that we should use a neutral language because Arabic is a gender language. For example, if we are addressing a male person, we say anta, which means you. The same you applies to if addressing a female, and we say anti. If we are addressing two males or two females, we say antuma, and it's All these pronouns are equivalent to you. You are definitely should be familiar with the cultural and religious sensitivities we have here in the Arab world, because there are quite a lot of sensitive topics to consider when translating video games into Arabic. For example, homosexuality, explicit sexual scenes, nudity, alcohol, religious symbols, or mentioning verse from Quran or Bible are still things to avoid when translating video games in Arabic. You know, like a good example about the idea of respecting the cultural and religious sensitivities is the popular game Happy Farm. We have the equivalent translation for Happy Farm in Arabic is Al Mazra Saida. It's nothing was changed about the it's Happy is Al Saida and Farm is Al Mazra. So we don't change anything in the title of this game. But the game reached the high number of players in Arabic-speaking countries because the successfully localized Arabic version that took the local culture into account and doesn't feature pigs because Muslims don't raise them. So that was a good one because you respect the culture and you tell your client if you're definitely a translator started to say, we don't have pigs and we don't raise pigs here. And raise this query to the client or the project manager. And the client noticed that would have impact the game negatively. So we need to change this. So they didn't feature pigs. And so everybody is happy now. Yeah, that's... you know, like game localization is a very big topic. You cannot just say, I don't know, like you have like millions of episodes and millions of books or papers to talk about. So, yeah.
All right. So, Emma, thank you so much for joining us for this episode of the podcast. We discussed game localization and the rise of Arabic in the gaming industry, and it was very interesting. For our listeners, if you want to have more information about the gaming industry, or maybe for a language professional who wants to delve into this area, you can reach out to Eman Abdul. Her LinkedIn profile is in the podcast description. So, Eman, thank you so much for coming, and we'll get in touch once again.
Thank you so much, Adi, for this opportunity, and I hope everyone enjoyed this talk. I hope to see you like in the near future, saying that the African languages are popular and the big names in the gaming market are starting to expand to the African countries.
I look forward to that also. Thank you.
We invite you to go to multilingual.com/AfricaLSP to receive a free 1-year digital subscription to Multilingual Magazine. You can also find this link in the podcast description.